shines through the day. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
And a few towns in Washington County. And you are on a number of committees, the Tourism and Parks Committee, Small Business Committee, Education, Economic Development, and Children and Families.
All correct. Although I don't know about the rock star thing, but that's a nice introduction.
Well, no problem with that. I'm thrilled that you're here, and this is actually your second time at WGXC, so thanks so much for supporting this station.
Yeah, pleasure.
And we're going to get right to it because we don't have as much time as I would like. Now, the interesting thing about you in regard to this next issue is the fact that you are a pilot.
Correct.
You, in fact, were a commercial airline pilot mm-hmm. And an executive jet pilot, I think, for KeyBank.
Yep, corporate and then commercial aviation. Yeah, and the commuters before mm-hmm. I went to KeyBank. So, yeah, about 14 years of flying professionally.
Yeah. So the next, this question, I guess you could answer it as a pilot or as an assemblyman or as both.
Okay.
Columbia County Airport is becoming an issue here. And in all fairness to you, I don't believe the airport is actually within your district.
Right.
But you do have some responsibility for Columbia County. But the issue is that it's a county-owned airport, and it's operated by a private company that is evidently successful enough because they've been there quite some time. I imagine mm-hmm. they wouldn't be there if they weren't successful. But to the average person in Columbia County passing by the airport, it doesn't seem all that active. So you kind of wonder why are they doing so well? But there's a ground school there. I think the flight school. There's they have at least one or two executive jets operating there, and the issue is it could stand some modernization as far as a buffer zone around the existing runway. Mm-hmm. I think if they were able to have a buffer zone, they might be eligible for some type of grant. Not sure if it's a state grant or a federal grant, but probably federal Aviation Administration. And then they could do some upgrading as far as their electronic equipment to allow bad weather landings. Now, some people feel that the airport should just stay as it is. There are some that feel it should be modernized. Then we have the side issue of the golf course next to the airport. Some of the golf course's land would have to be used for this expansion, and issues of eminent domain come into play. Where do you stand on this as a pilot, as an assemblyman?
Yeah, well, it's obviously a touchy issue, as are a lot of these type of issues. Can certainly you can get two divided camps pretty quickly. As a pilot, I'd say, hey, great, we need more modern runways, more modern equipment. Anything, if you lengthen the runways, it allows you to bring in some more corporate jets that may not be able to access that. So there's some upside to that. But you have to certainly listen to the community and what the community wants. And there's always naysayers out there, no matter what you're trying to do. We've seen people push back against solar panels going up at Skidmore College. So there's always going to be pushback to whatever you want to do. That's one thing you learn in Albany quickly. There's a lot of opposition to even the greatest idea in the world. Mm-hmm. So I would kind of try to, if it's not my area, although I certainly spend a lot of time at Kozel's. It seems like I'm down at Kozel's quite a bit for different events, so I drive by all the time. I drove by there just a few minutes ago.
That's very close to the runway, so you want the aircraft to come in safely.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't want your meal to be interrupted.
Yeah, I think you always have to look to try to modernize. I would try to certainly talk with the golf course owners. Do they want to sell that piece of land? I'm never a huge fan of having land taken from somebody, obviously, unless there's absolutely no other way around it. But if your county's going to grow and you're trying to grow economically, which really I think most people want to see Columbia County succeed and grow economically, of course, then modernizing your runway and your approach facilities and is a good thing to do in that, that you talked about bad weather landing. There are certain facilities where you can't get in. I mean, you have higher landing minimums. I don't want to get too much into the piloting thing, but if you don't have the right equipment there, you can't, as a pilot, come in and land when the weather's really, really bad. You can kind of come in when it's so bad, you know, depending on what the approach minimums are and things like that. So modernizing the equipment and the facility, by and large, is a good thing. And also, you say, how are they successful? There's a lot of transient airplanes in and out of that airport through the day. You may have King Airs and corporate jets coming in and out, staying for the day while the people that own those jets do their business, and then they're out of there the next day. So there's a lot of things that go on in an airport that the general public never really sees.
Did you personally ever fly into that airport?
A couple of times, but not that much, because when I was flying, when I got here to New York, I was flying commercially, and we didn't serve that airport. I was based out of Albany, so there's really no need for me to come down here other than a little bit of pleasure flying. So I wasn't in and out here that much.
Yeah. There was a meeting at the Columbia County Board of Supervisors, and the gentleman who owns the golf course spoke up. He's a fairly flamboyant individual, and he was really pumped up, and he was walking up and down the aisles and waving his arms, and he made some excellent points. You know, he is willing to sell, but he's not being offered the price, and I think there are actually some restrictions on what the government can give him for the land, because they don't take into account expenses like relocating a whole of the golf course. You know, you can pay for the land, but not for relocating one of your holes.
Yeah, in which case he could end up with really virtually nothing.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got some valid issues in regard to that. I mean, I personally think that the people of Columbia County need to decide if they want a credible airport moving forward. And I would guess, I may be wrong, but I would guess that if the word got out among pilots such as yourself that, hey, this is a pretty cool place, it's safe, they've got modern equipment, you might tend to use it more.
Well, yeah, you're going to see some growth from that.
Yeah, and that could create some jobs and a little tax revenue. But well, thank you for that. And by the way, do you fly a lot?
A little bit, not as much. I'm actually teaching a commercial aviation ground school course for Schenectady County Community College. In fact, I have class today, 1 to like 2:45. They're taking part of their final exam today, so we're getting toward the end of the course.
Okay.
My son, Daniel, is a senior in high school, and I'm on the Questar BOCES Aviation Committee. They asked me to serve on that committee, and I'm happy to do so. And I found out, I didn't even know this program existed before, but Questar BOCES has got a great aviation program for high school kids, and it operates out of Columbia County Airport for juniors and seniors, and they started it this year up in Schenectady County Airport, where I flew for years with KeyBank, and my son Daniel is a senior at Hoosick Valley. He is flying out of Schenectady County Airport. So right now, Danny is flying more than I am at this point.
Wow. I think he recently got his license, right?
He soloed recently.
I think I saw your Facebook post.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
That's got to make you feel good as a pilot yourself.
Well, it was
to
great
see
for
your son.
Me. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it worked out great, because the day that he soloed, I did not know, and I'm not sure that he knew. He got there, and they said, okay, you're ready. You're going to go solo. I think they don't like to tell you too much in advance so you don't get too nervous, but I showed up, and they called me and said, hey, Danny's up there soloing, and it just worked out perfect. I was pulling in the airport to teach my course anyway, so I got to see him go around the pattern. I did not text his mother, who was teaching. My wife Maggie was teaching a class. I didn't text her that he was until he was all done and down safely, and we got a little bit of video of it. So it was a great moment for me as a parent, but also as a pilot to say, hey, you know what, hopefully he's following in my footsteps. He does want to become a professional pilot, he says right now, which is great. So we're going to try to help him as much as we can. So it was great to see, and I went back and checked my own logbook from back in 1981, and he soloed at a younger age than I did. I was 18, and Danny's only 17. So
wow.
He's beating his old man, which
That's
is great.
That's spectacular.
That's what we want to see.
Well, I'm going to, as all great radio show hosts do, I'm going to try and segue that into
right.
another topic. If you run for governor, mm-hmm. is Danny going to be shuttling you around New York State from town to town, you know, Utica, Oneida?
I think I think I may be shuttling myself. You'd have a governor that could actually fly the airplane himself. But maybe Danny will sit right seat for me. You know, we'll see what happens. I think he's got a little ways to go before he's ready for that level of responsibility.
Yeah, what's up with your, I was actually going to talk about this last, but... You know, why not? Are you really giving consideration to running for governor?
Yeah, you know, it's on a daily basis. It mm-hmm. almost, constantly I'm thinking about it. And quite honestly, there are times where I'm sitting there saying, okay, we're going to go do this. And then there's other times where I say, well, can we possibly raise the money needed to put forth a good, strong campaign? So it's a huge leap of faith if you run without the money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit of a catch-22. You can't get the money until you announce that you're going to run. And even if you announce you're going to run, I mean, we're already hearing that some of the big donors are being threatened by the Cuomo administration, mm-hmm. if not the governor himself, saying, you know, if you donate to my opponents, you're going to be put on our enemies list, which is... that's almost public knowledge at this point. So that there's a lot of people that fear this governor. There's not a lot of people that like this governor, mm-hmm. but there's a lot that fear him. And, you know, you have people with business before the state, and they're afraid to contribute to somebody. So if we do run, it was going to have to be a complete grassroots campaign. And then you're hoping, you can never hope to raise the amount of money that he already has, which is 30-plus million. He was in Washington, D.C., the other night raising even more money, and last week he had up to a $50,000 ticket fundraiser headlined by Billy Joel. So this is from a guy, by the way, who constantly says he's all in favor of public financing of campaigns, which is the taxpayers financing our campaigns. I think that's the wrong thing to do. He claims to be in favor of it, but then hypocritically, I think, the very next day after the Moreland Commission report gets released talking about public financing of campaigns, he's down in New York City having a $50,000 plate fundraiser. So the hypocrisy is stunning, and it doesn't go unnoticed. But the reality is he's sitting on $30 million, and if you're going to run, you've got to be able to compete. And because the danger is people say, well, you don't need money. You do. You do need a lot of money to run because if you don't have any money to fight back and get your message out, then the opponent defines you with their money. They begin to run commercials and turn you into the devil mm-hmm. in 30 seconds, and you don't have any ability to counter that. So that's why, sadly, money is a factor in this decision. As is party support, you have to make sure that the party chairs and the county chairs are going to be with you. I will say this. I do think that in upstate New York, we would dominate Andrew Cuomo and absolutely clean his clock in almost every county upstate New York.
Well, the reason I referred to you as a rock star in the beginning is because I've seen you in action at a couple events. You're very popular with a group called Hudson Valley Americans for Freedom. I saw you in an event, I think it was in a hotel in Poughkeepsie,
mm-hmm,
perhaps.
Yeah.
And there were local politicians there who weren't getting anywhere near the reception that that you were getting. So, I mean, you have a good base of support as mm-hmm. far as I could see. And I wish you luck with that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Well, let's jump on to another topic today, which is the power line issue, which is a big deal in Columbia County.
Yep.
I'm going to read a little bit from, first I'm going to put my glasses on. I'm going to read from the Columbia paper, November 28th issue, an article by Christy Berner. Residents want live wires buried. Power line plan for county generates local opposition. At first glance, Governor Cuomo's solution to New York's energy problem seems like a no-brainer. Transmit excess power capacity from upstate wind farms and power plants to downstate regions that need more electricity. Generating more power creates jobs upstate and gets electricity to New Yorkers who need it to power their homes and businesses. But some residents have counties along the route of the power lines who don't expect to see the direct benefits are angry. That was true of many in the crowd of more than 200 last Friday night at the Livingston Town Garage, where people geared up to fight a proposed expansion of high-voltage power lines in the county. Columbia County is slated to be part of a 153-mile-long power line expansion running from Oneida to Dutchess County. The proposal would add additional taller transmission towers and would expand existing right-of-ways up to 125 feet. So I'm not going to read any more of the article because I don't want to take up your time, but where do you stand on this? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a little ambivalent here. You know, I can't help thinking, for example, of the Ashokan Reservoir. Long ago, the town that was there was relocated, and the town was literally buried in water to form a reservoir to feed New York City. And, you know, hey, we're all in the same state, and we should be helpful to one another. That's one side of what's going on in my mind. Mm-hmm. But on the other side is, hey, maybe people upstate just do too much for people downstate. Where are you on this issue?
Well, that's a really complex issue, and there's a couple of points there at the beginning of the article that I could even take exception with. But part of what's going on here, as far as I know at this point, doesn't affect my district. I believe it's more in Dede Barrett's district and maybe Pete Lopez. But that being said, it's still a Columbia County issue, and we all kind of look at the county. We all sort of have the approach that we serve all of the county, not that it's my territory in these towns and Pete's or Dede's in these other towns.
Yeah.
We all tend to work and try to work together.
It's hard not to.
Yeah, and we get along fine, and you try to, you know, help each other out. So I don't look and say, oh, that's Livingston, that's not Steve McLaughlin's district. I don't look at it that way. So I completely get that if a power line was coming through my town where I live in Scatico, and we do have high tension lines fairly, not that close to my house, but they're probably within a quarter mile, half a mile away. It would be a lot nicer if they were buried underground. So I completely understand that sentiment. And I, you know, if there's any way to make that happen, I'd like to see that happen as well. Certainly for the beauty of the land and the what you're going to be looking at every day. Absolutely. And so that being said, I would support that issue. Now, a lot of what the author said there at the beginning is, it's not really a no-brainer to bring this power down. What this is doing is this is all designed to give the governor the ability to shut down the Indian Point nuclear plant is what this is. I'm not even sure that's a good
idea.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, where are you getting this from?
Well, that's really kind of out there that's the stated goal here is I believe he wants to shut this down. He's talked about that. That's about 30% or more of New York City's power. I'm not sure that this power line coming through here is going to replicate that.
So shutting it down is basically, it can't even be on the table unless there's more power going downstate in some other fashion.
Absolutely.
So
you have to have that power in place before you're going to shut it down.
Uh-oh. I think we've got Powergate here, the Powergate scandal.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that's what they've been talking about quite often down there is, okay, they're going to shut down Indian Point. You can't just shut it down. You have to have the power to replace it. I'm not even sure that this line will do that, but it'd supplement it to some extent. The other thing that should be happening, I believe, is the safe extraction of natural gas. That's a great way to get power and electricity as well, and this governor's not doing that in the southern tier. So I'm a firm believer that we can do it safely because it's being done safely all over the country. So that's a whole other aspect of this thing. But as far as the power line goes, I think the goal is they want to shut down Indian Point, and this is a piece of that puzzle.
Well, if it inevitably must be expanded, the cost of burying the lines
exorbitant.
Mm-hmm. and who pays for that?
And that's the unknown. I don't know, because certainly the power companies aren't going to want to. Mm-hmm. The residents can't. I mean, who can afford that?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Will they be above ground in certain areas and below ground in certain stretches? I'm not sure how this is going to play out. But This is, again, one of those local issues where people get fired up very quickly, and I completely understand why.
Well,
I would do the same thing.
If the power's going to New York City, maybe there should be a surtax down there. I mean,
yes,
the liberals in New York love extra taxes, so we might as well have one to bury the... The power lines, you know.
They want the power coming through our territory, our area here. We're okay, yeah.
Call it the New York City Power Line Burial Tax.
That works for me.
Okay. Well, we've resolved that issue here, folks. And, you know, I wasn't planning to talk about this next issue, but on the way here, I picked up the newspaper.
Okay.
I saw that there was a headline in the Albany Times Union about property tax reduction or stabilization, and it seemed like they were giving the governor some points for his brilliant proposal. And then I happened to notice that you introduced legislation, AO4078,
mm-hmm.
which seems to have done the same thing.
Yeah.
And so tell us about the legislation that you introduced, which was... it had to do with fixing real estate property assessment values for those over 65.
Yeah, that was... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
That was a bill that I had proposed, I think it was 2 years ago now, or maybe I might have reintroduced it again last year. I think that's what happened, because, of course, it never made it to the floor. You know, I've always, excuse me, believed that the seniors here need to be protected and helped, as well as certainly all of the taxpayers do. But that was a bill that would have kind of capped their property taxes, very much what the governor's talking about doing here with this tax relief commission. It would have capped their property taxes at their present level. So they weren't going to have them taken away or gone, but they weren't going to continue to increase. And the reason that I felt that way and introduced the bill is because, you know, when you go door to door, and you did this, I mean, you were out there knocking on doors as well, when you're campaigning for office, and literally, not figuratively, but literally, senior citizens are breaking down in tears at the door, that gets to you. I mean, that if you have any kind of heart at all, it upsets you. So I would see them crying, saying, you know, I love my home, it's paid off, but my taxes are higher than my mortgage ever was, and I'm going to have to sell because I can't afford to live here. They didn't want to leave, but a lot of them were being forced out of their homes by these confiscatory taxes.
And I think what's lost on some people is that to some living in your district and in the county where I live, a few dollars a month here, a few dollars a month there, does make a difference, especially if you're on a fixed income, in regard to being current on your mortgage, saving your home, repairing your home.
Right.
And it shouldn't be taken so lightly. Like, there was an issue in Copaic about expansion of or upgrade to the library that's there, which is a rather large library for a place like Copaic, and someone was saying, you know, this is just going to add like $9 a month mm-hmm. to people's taxes, and it's worth it. Well, you know, $9 there, $6 here, and pretty soon, you know what? I'm $50 short of what I need to pay my mortgage.
That's right.
It's not good.
Yeah, when you hear a news reporter or a politician say, it's only... You have to really think about that when they say, well, it's only $9 a mm-hmm. month. And then, well, the property taxes for the average home are only going up $20 a month or $18 a month. You're right. You add all that up together. Now, if you're a widow on a fixed income that hasn't seen an increase in years, okay, now that's $50, $60, $75 that you don't have. It's not like you're sitting on that money. So when people say it's only, that's always said by people that can afford it.
Right.
That it really doesn't matter to. For
right.
someone else... it's not it's only, it's oh my God.
Yeah.
It's another $50.
When I was campaigning and talking to people, I ran into multiple people who were upset about the fact that dollar stores, I mean, I won't give the name of the three or four well-known so-called dollar stores, but they were saying to me the dollar stores, with one exception, are no longer dollar stores. I mean, these people recognize the difference between actually paying literally a dollar for something or $1.79.
Yep.
So $9 would make a difference.
Yep.
So anyway, what this legislation AO4078 is, it didn't work.
It never got to the floor. Surprisingly enough, the majority didn't want to put that bill on the floor. Actually, I'd say not surprisingly, they didn't want to put a bill like that on the floor. And that's something that I think folks upstate really need to understand, especially as we move into an election year next year. Let's just say the downstate, the city crowd, the city legislators, they don't care what your property taxes are. They could care less. They didn't care about the property tax cap. It didn't register with them. I had an assemblyman come up to me and say, and this is a Yale-educated guy, great guy, but he completely doesn't understand our way of life up here. He says, what's the big deal with this property tax cap? Why are you guys pushing it so hard? I said, well, it's because your folks, your constituents, already have a tax cap, and it's called rent control. They're all living, they're renting, they don't own, but I've got folks up here paying $6,000, $10,000, $12,000, huge amounts of their income to property taxes with no end in sight. So there's a completely different mindset from the group of city legislators versus the country legislators.
Although the great liberal scheme called rent control and rent stabilization, I have to say, as a former New York City boy, it doesn't seem to be working all that well, because They have the most stringent rent control and rent stabilization laws, but everyone knows the rents are absurdly high,
right,
in New York anyway.
Right.
I mean, I think the average one-bedroom apartment in New York City is now something like $1,900 or something. You know,
yeah.
So...
Well, for some. So, I mean,
for
but,
some, but
like
yeah.
A typical progressive program, it picks winners and losers, and there are
right.
some that succeed, and many, many fall through the cracks. In fact, I'd say most fall through the cracks.
Right.
But
the only one that could win with rent control and rent stabilization is someone who's willing to stay in one place for, like, their whole life.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So, and there are very few people like that these days.
But when you look at what just happened yesterday with the release of this tax commission report was very interesting. A lot of the business tax proposals have been on the table for years, and it was the Assembly Republicans that have put those bills on the table, and yes, the Senate Republicans. Those have never been acted on, and a lot of what you saw yesterday, you know, the powers that be are going to run around saying, oh, we're proposing to cut taxes $2 billion. Well, that's not $2 billion in a year. It's $2 billion up to 2018. And only if, you know, look at the parentheses there, only if every one of these proposals is enacted. But sadly, those proposals have been proposed before and never been enacted. So I don't hold out much hope that Sheldon Silver and his crew is going to support cutting taxes on businesses. And then on the property tax side of things, on the property tax side of things, there's a lot of caveats with that. It's a stick and a carrot type approach, and this governor typically calls people out of the herd, demonizes them, freezes them, demonize them. Where have we heard that before? It's an Alinsky tactic. Freeze them, polarize your opponent, demonize them. He's done it with Second Amendment supporters, he's done it with the teachers, he's done it with state workers, and now it's the county's turn. He's going to blame the counties for what's going on here, saying, well, the counties need to consolidate. And the county, as if the counties haven't thought of that already, by the way. They've all thought about that. It's very difficult to consolidate, because when it comes right down to it, a lot of times the public doesn't want to consolidate services between counties. So he's going to say, if the counties do this, then we can freeze your property taxes for 2 years. That's not a cut. That's just keeping them where they
right.
are. They're already way too high, by the way.
Right.
But we're just going to keep them where they are. That is only if the counties jump through all of these hoops. And then if they don't, what happens? The counties become the bad guy. And in Albany, they say, well, we tried, but those darn counties, they just wouldn't listen.
Right. And then the certain politicians take a lot of credit for doing something that really isn't that big of a deal to begin with.
Nope.
And
it's smoke and mirrors is what it is.
Yes, it is. But as a person who's getting older, I hope you at some point reintroduce your...
Oh, I will. I definitely will. Yeah, we'll keep reintroducing, and hopefully someday they'll see the light. I just think that, you know, again, if you're a senior in your home, we want to encourage people to stay in their homes, age in place, if you will, and stay in the community.
And in New York.
Yeah, and
I mean,
in New York.
People are bailing on New York.
Yep. they're leaving like the place is on fire. They say New York's open for business. I mean, yeah, for moving companies, it's open
for
business.
Here's how bad it actually is, folks. According to what I've read, that there is an exodus from New York State every year, equivalent to the population of the state of Connecticut.
Wow.
Now, there are other people who are coming in to New York for job opportunities, New York City and such, but there is still a big differential. The outgoing far exceeds the incoming, and you know, if most of these people are older people on fixed income, it's sort of a form of discrimination. You're telling your old people, hey, sorry, can't afford to be here anymore.
Yep.
Why don't you go?
And the other thing is what you see in New York, it's really draining from the top down, from upstate New York, from Plattsburgh all the way down to Westchester. Mm-hmm. It's draining, as people say, you know, I love New York, but I left New York. That's now should be the state slogan. It shouldn't be I love New York, I left New York. So
good point.
I mean, they're heading out, and it should not be that way. This is a phenomenal state, a beautiful natural resources, great people. We have everything going for us except for a government that won't get the heck out of the way and let the state succeed and grow. So there's a reason why in the past couple of censuses we keep losing congressional representation down there. It's going to other states, and they become more powerful than us. They have more influence than us. You're seeing it with Texas and the Sun Belt states. They're growing. We're shrinking. That's unacceptable to me. It should be unacceptable to everybody. The only place that's seeing growth is just little pockets around here. But mainly, it's the growth is happening in New York City, and it's a lot of successful people are exiting the state. They're saying, you know, I made it. I've got a nice retirement here, but I don't have enough to stay in New York, so I'm leaving. Or young people that graduate don't have the opportunity that they need, and they leave. It's not right, and there's a way to stop it, and that's what I fight for every day.
Well, good for you. I appreciate the fact that you recognize that as an issue. Now, Steve, do you need a break?
No, I'm good.
You're good?
Yeah,
because I have a CD loaded. I could play some music. You could walk away for a couple of minutes
if
you want.
Totally up. Whatever you want to do.
I'm good right now.
I'm here to serve.
I'm good. No emergencies at the moment. So we're good to go. And forget about that music break. Now, I want to jump to an issue that's pretty big all over right now. And actually, we had an entire show on the Right Opinion dedicated to Common Core.
Yeah.
This was, I think it was my last show. And we had as guests on that show Anne Laval, who's a big anti-Common Core activist and mother of seven, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And State Senator Marchione was supposed to be here, but her chief of staff, Joshua Fitzpatrick, showed up instead. And so we spent about an hour on it, and I don't want to spend a lot of time with it now, but I'd like your take on Common Core, and if you're involved in it in any way, let's hear about it.
Yeah, well, I'm heavily involved in it. In fact, a week from today, so next Wednesday, the 18th, we are having a forum at Hudson Valley Community College that I'm hosting, and Pete Lopez will be there, Jim Tedisco, Ed Ra, and Al Graff. Ed and Al are down in the city in Long Island area. All of us are members of the Education Committee. And Jim Tedisco is not. However, he's very heavily involved in this as well. So we're hosting this forum. There have been forums all over the state hosted by the Assembly Minority Conference. We have been very vocal and really upfront on this issue right from the get-go. So I'm glad to have them there. We've also got three national experts coming. There's Dr. Milgram out of Stanford. Dr. Stotsky out of Massachusetts will be joining us via Skype. And Leonie Hameson will be coming up from the city. Now, Leonie is an expert on data mining and what's going on with our kids' data and how that's being uploaded to InBloom, which is a corporation run by Bill Gates and the Gates Foundation, among other philanthropists. So she's very involved in that. And Dr. Milgram and Stotsky were on the Common Core Evaluation Committee and refused to sign off on it. When they saw what this was, they absolutely refused to sign off on it. So I'm thrilled that they're going to be joining us. I think it's the first time they've joined a forum here in New York State.
And by the way, just so the audience knows, you personally, you're an educated person. You have a bachelor's degree. You have a master's degree. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're anti-education.
No, and my wife's a teacher.
Your wife's a teacher.
And her parents
are
teachers.
You want people to be properly educated, and anyone who doesn't has got to be a fool. Mm-hmm. But the problem you have with Common Core philosophically is what?
Well, philosophically, one, I don't want our kids being treated like cogs in a corporate wheel, and that's what this is. There's many, many problems. I'll start with the first one, data mining, number one. I don't want our kids, some little kid gets in a scrap at school. That should kind of be, you know what I mean? Kids are kids. Things are going to happen at school. I remember we used to get in fights on the playground once in a while.
Steve. You know what I mean? No, not you.
Even back then, I didn't take grief from anybody. But, you know, you got a little scrape. It's not the end of the world. Kids are kids. Suddenly, we're gonna upload that data. It's going to follow them throughout their life. Or maybe you do something dumb as a teenager. That happens. Kids are kids. They're not perfect. Suddenly, we're uploading that data to the cloud, to some Inbloom Corporation, is the name of the corporation that Gates is running. I don't like that. I don't want this data out there all
and
over the place.
And it's not optional. The data mining part is not optional. It's optional if the state signs up for Common Core. At least on the surface, it's optional. But when you get into the meat of it, there are incentives that the feds throw out there, which makes it very unattractive if you don't sign up for Common Core.
Right, but this was, is, and always mm-hmm. has been about the money. This was right. Race to the top on steroids. So there's the data mining issue that I have huge problems with, and there's a lawsuit by a couple of parents that I'm looking to join. We're exploring doing an amicus brief to join them as a friend of the court. I want this data mining stopped. I want the upload of the data of our children stopped, and I want it deleted by Inbloom, and I want proof that Inbloom deleted it. This needs to stop immediately. And the good thing is, if there's a bright spot here on that issue, this is a bipartisan issue. We just had a big assembly forum, and when you get 15 assembly members to show up when they're not in session, and they came from all over the state, and they're pretty ticked off, and it's on a bipartisan issue, that's a wonderful thing.
Well, do you mean bipartisan in the assembly?
Yeah, Republican and Democrat both there.
How did New York ever accept to become part of it?
We never voted on it in the legislature. Never voted on it. This was a decision made, I think, by SED. What did happen was, and I fought this the night that we passed the APPR, the teacher evaluation bill. 2 a.m, another one of the governor's messages of necessity had to be done right now. I stood up on the floor then and I said, this is wrong. You're putting a scarlet letter on these teachers. You're kind of demonizing the teachers. Again, as I said earlier, mm-hmm. he likes to demonize groups of people. And I was proven right. And what that was all about was New York had taken the $700 million from the federal government. Federal government said, if you don't, and that's all part of the race to the top money, which really became Common Core. If you don't have a teacher evaluation plan in place, you've got to give us back the $700 million. Well, of course, New York didn't have the $700 million. But in the grand scheme of things, we could have found it, and we would have been much better off giving the feds back their $700 million and saying, keep it. And I would urge everybody, if you have kids, and even if you don't have kids, learn what's going on with this Common Core. Come to our forum next Wednesday night at Hudson Valley Community College, 5:30 to 8:30, and see. Get your questions answered. You can talk about what your concerns are. So there's the data mining piece. There's the curriculum piece, which is blatantly inappropriate on a lot of levels. And the party line, the corporate line you're getting from John King and from the governor, is, well, you know, it's standards. We have to have rigorous standards. Well, number one, that assumes that we didn't have any rigorous standards before, which is nonsense. I mean, a lot of these teachers do a phenomenal job. A lot of these kids do a phenomenal job. So there's that whole issue. And so anyway, it's lots and lots we could talk about.
Well, we're going to go on, and I want you to announce that event towards the end of the show. Right now, I just want to remind everyone that you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, This is the Right Opinion Show with Ed Furtick, and our guest today is Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin. I also have some announcements. Of course, as always, stay tuned for Tyson with Zoom when this show is over, so don't go anywhere. Hope you check out the WGXC.org website. You can post events, check out news. There's all kinds of stuff you could do at WGXC.org, so please check it out. This show, The Right Opinion, has a Facebook page. I personally can be tweeted at Ed Furtick at Eddie F on Radio. And I'm going to be, well, I am already in progress of doing another show for WGXC called Soul Train. That's S-O-L-E, and it's a sports fitness program that's going to help you maintain a healthy lifestyle through aerobic activities of all sorts, and even non-aerobic activities, because I'm sure everyone wants to be as fit and healthy as possible. So that's going to be called Soul Train. The first episode has already been pre-recorded, and I don't know exactly when the first segment is going to air, which, by the way, is going to be about fitness and the bicycle. So I do think it's going to be during the morning show, but I'm not positive. So you'll get more information about that. And now back to The Right Opinion with Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin. And we're going to jump to an issue. If you don't mind, we're going to talk about Obamacare a little bit. And I'll preface this by saying that according to the Quinnipiac poll, President Obama is now at his lowest popularity ever. In fact, he's at about 44% with females, and also about 41% with 18 to 29 year olds. So he has taken a precipitative dip. I believe most people associate that dip with Obamacare. Mm-hmm. People feel that they were lied to, deceived. And it is in my opinion, and this is the right opinion, but it's my opinion and the opinion of my guest, perhaps, and not of management of WGXC in any way, but it's an absolute failure. I think the media is trying to make us think it's only a website issue. I don't believe it is. But anyway, in New York, we have the New York Healthcare Exchange. Mm-hmm. Every state was able to set up an exchange to implement Obamacare. How's that doing?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. First of all, when you said that people think they were lied to and deceived, they were lied to and
right.
deceived.
They don't think.
Multiple times by this president. They were flat out lied 29 times. If you misspeak once or twice, okay, you misspoke. You didn't quite know. But when you go out there 29 different times on the record and say, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. Not only was that not true, you probably can't keep your identity safe if you go on this website, because there's not enough security built in.
And
if
even
any.
Even if it was true, which it isn't, if it was true, how could you admit that you did not know something that important?
Right.
I mean, if you didn't know that, heads should be rolling right now, because it's a basic piece of information which does appear to be a blatant lie.
Right.
And I also have to say that there were many brave conservatives out there who were relentlessly talking about the shortcomings of Obamacare a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And these people were called crazy, mean-spirited. Yeah. Because they were saying that this was going to happen. They knew it was going to happen. People like Michelle Bachmann, people like Herman Cain when he was running for president, people like Alan West in Congress. They were telling us this 2 years ago, And the media was crucifying them for having the audacity to challenge Obamacare.
Yeah, how dare you question the king?
Yes, yes. But relative to other states, is the New York Healthcare Exchange working?
Well, to some degree, but as one of the articles said, the reason New York appears to be more successful than other states is we already destroyed the individual market a long time ago when Mario Cuomo was the governor. So we went through this nightmare quite some time ago. So what's happening here in New York? The site works better. The New York site does. I find it ironic that we're supposed to trust that the federal government can take care of healthcare when they can't even build a website to take care of healthcare for $634 million. And
It's probably closer to $1 billion.
That's right. And one of the experts said, really, you could build that site for about $10 million and have it work properly. So I think GoDaddy could have built the site better than this one. But be that as it may, New York's is working better. But what's happening in New York is people are being pushed rapidly onto Medicaid. That's really what's going on here in New York. Now, do we want people to have coverage that need it? Absolutely. But this is exploding our Medicaid system, and we already have the most expensive Medicaid system in the country. We already spend more than three states combined. Was it Texas? I don't know. Was it California, Texas, and I think it's Pennsylvania or Florida combined? Now, California has double the people we do. We're spending over $1 billion a week already on Medicaid. Now, when you throw a couple hundred thousand more New Yorkers on it, that money's got to come from somewhere. So eventually, this is going to be a real problem for New York. Right now, the feds are picking up a lot of the costs, but what happens a few years down the line if the feds no longer are covering a lot of that expense and pass that back to the states? It's going to be a bit of a problem for us. So New York is faring better than other states, but largely that's because we have already destroyed the individual market for insurance about a decade ago.
Do you think that Obamacare is going to could be an issue in statewide elections, or is it? Do you see it as only an issue in national offices? I mean, quite frankly, I think that if there are state assemblymen out there, state senators, governor, who were so enthusiastic about Obamacare and telling us how wonderful it all is, that they should be held accountable for deceiving us.
I agree, and I think they will be, because it certainly goes to their judgment. If they couldn't understand what a nightmare this is, what kind of real judgment do they have? And when we had a U.S. senator here, Kirsten Gillibrand, say that, we all knew the president was lying.
No,
the problem is we didn't all know that. A lot of people believed this president when he was lying. And if Senator Gillibrand's admitting that she knew he was lying, then she should be held accountable for that as well.
Well, this president had so many people fooled into thinking he was a saintly figure that he really could have said anything and you'd believe it. And again, if he really believed what he was saying about Obamacare, it's almost worse in a way, because it means he didn't have access to very significant information, to say the least. So he can't win on this.
And actually,
at all,
the least of his issues right now, and the least of the problems for this federal government is that website. They're making it out like once this is solved, it's all good. That's going to get even worse. If this website was working as it should have and as everybody should have had a right to expect it would work, if it was working, I think people would be even more angry about Obamacare, because they would see that suddenly they have a $6,000 deductible and their costs have gone through the roof and their coverage is not nearly as good as what they had. So basically, there's a lot of people out there right now that are going to find out under Obamacare that they're really self-insuring up to $5,000 or $6,000. And there's not a lot of Americans that have $5,000 or $6,000 laying around to self-insure.
That's a good point. So, to summarize, we were told if you like your insurance, you could keep it. We were told that some families would save $2,500 a year in their health care costs. We were told that all Americans deserve to have their health care costs reduced. And none of that's true. And in fact, more people are losing their health care
than are gaining.
My sister was one of them, actually. and it's not good.
And here's my guess, here's my bet. About a year from now, maybe two, you're going to see the progressives out there say, you know what, you're right, this isn't working, we tried, it's not working. Clearly, we need to go to single payer, which is what Barack Obama said he always wanted to begin with when he was a candidate running for the presidency. In fact, he had said he wouldn't accept a plan like this. So this is a stopgap for them. I think it's designed to fail. And a year or two from now, they'll be screaming that we need to have single payer, and clearly the government should take care of every aspect.
Well, I already had a liberal acquaintance of mine that I see in a cafe now and then, and he's having a tough time dealing with the fact that the president might be vulnerable on this issue. You know, he just can't come to grips with it, and he gets all tongue-tied and everything. And when he finally gave an excuse for the president, it was, well, his problem was he wasn't ruthless enough when he put this whole thing together. He made too many concessions to the right wing, and that's why the plan turned out to be the way it is. You know, if he had done it the way he wanted it, instead of listening to advice from people, it would have been. I'm going, oh my goodness.
So he's.
Do you really believe this?
Yeah, and what is he saying? That really he thinks that the president should have dictatorial type powers unilaterally what he wants?
He's saying that the president is so brilliant and so saintly that it's impossible that he could have made a mistake. It's just that we common people, I mean, the president's so deep, us common people, we just can't understand his brilliance.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, because I'll take a guy with common sense any day over a Ivy League guy. I find a lot of the Ivy League guys don't have a lot of common sense. Give me a farmer any day that has that's working every day out there and knows what's going on. I'll take somebody with common sense any day.
Well, there's a book, I think it came out in my graduate school days, The Death of Common Sense. Mm-hmm. It's not a big book. Actually, you could get through it in one night. But its message is very profound, that in American society, we've sort of let common sense action fall by the wayside. People have intuition, and we don't use it enough. Mm-hmm. Everything now we want to analyzed to death until we come up with the answer that we want.
Yep. Well, doesn't it stand to reason, though? You talk about common sense. How was anybody supposed to believe that you're suddenly going to insure millions more people and have no increase in cost? Why would anybody have, in their right mind, believed that? As if the market suddenly wasn't going to have an impact.
Right.
Economics weren't going to apply to this.
Well, one thing people are never going to say about you, Congressman. I mean, see that? I just gave you a big promotion.
No, Chris is our congressman.
Chris, yes, and
good friend.
And I consider him a friend. Yeah. Also, I'm hard on him sometimes because I'd like to see him act a little more conservative. I'm sorry, Chris, for saying this.
He's a good man.
And I think he does a pretty good job.
And Chris has a tough job because of the district. He's so spread out, and there's such a constituency. And you try to listen to all your constituents. So, you know, he's a good friend, and, you know, we have hopefully a mutual admiration side. We get along great, and he's a good man.
I admire him, too, as a person. But, you know, hey, there's always a couple of sides in politics, and you need to be willing to speak your mind and hope that the other person, you know, as long as you're not being malicious.
Right.
And I hope the other person understands that. But thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
You were great. I hope you come back at some point. And don't forget to stay tuned for Tyson. Now, Holly Tanner is going to be back for a show on January 8th. She's going to be co-hosting with me. We're going to be talking about aging issues in Columbia County. So Holly Tanner makes a big return to WGXC on January 8th.
Another good friend.
Yes. She's an exceptional person, one of my favorite politicians.
Yep, she's great.
And we're lucky to have people like you two around here. So Tyson's coming up, and please stay tuned. He's going to have a great show. And we're going to go out with a little music by Toby Keith. So let's get going with this if I can get the CD player working properly here. Trust me, I can do this. So here we go.
A woman's touch.